In the new book, Eureka, Discovering Your Inner Scientist, physicist and science popularizer Chad Orzel argues that scientific thinking is a fundamental human activity and something that everyone does all the time. Science isn't a collection of arcane knowledge. It's a four-step process for figuring out how the world works. You look at the world, think of why it might work that way, test your theory with observations and experiments, and then, the fun part, tell everyone the results. The name of the new book is Eureka, Discovering Your Inner Scientist. Chad, thank you very much for being on the program. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me on.
Professor at Union College in Schenectady.
That's right.
And you've been on the program before, teaching relativity to your dog.
That's right.
Yeah, this is physics my third book. To your dog. And now this book, Eureka. So ultimately, this is a book about teaching it to us.
That's right. Well, not so much teaching science to people as helping people realize that they already understand how science works.
Understanding and not to be scared of understanding it, right?
Exactly. We too often think of scientists and science as this collection of facts that scientists know that ordinary people just can't handle. But in fact, it's really better thought of as a process. And it's a process that's at the heart of all sorts of things that people do just for fun and relaxation.
We'll talk about that in a moment. I think, fascinating about how we perceive certain subjects, science, math being two of them. And for science, what is it like for you as a professor to have students come in? Because there is an immediate fear of, this is something I probably should get, but I don't, and the wheels aren't going to turn the way they should.
Yeah, it's a hard problem. When we teach classes, particularly for people who aren't science majors, there's a very real fear of the subject. And you have to work very hard to make it approachable and to reassure people that, when I was a student, I had a lot of these same issues. And, it's something that you get past and you get used to. And so we have to work pretty hard at that.
When it comes to those everyday things, give us examples of everyday things that have those scientific overtones that can be, for want of a better term, the gateway.
So, for example, if you ever played a card game like bridge, the process you use in playing bridge is very much like what astronomers do to make discoveries, right? In bridge, you need to know what cards your partner across the table has in order to be able to win the game. But you can't just ask them what the cards they have or go look at their hand. You have to figure it out from this process of bidding that players take turns going around the table saying a number and a suit. But from that extremely limited information and a set of conventions that are grown up around the game, you can figure out exactly what cards your partner has and how many tricks you should expect to win in that hand. The same thing happens in astronomy. Astronomers would really love to go look at things out there in the universe directly, but they just can't get there. But they can infer from the light that reaches our telescopes some amazing things and even deduce the existence of vast amounts of dark matter and dark energy that we can't see at all, just from knowing the light that reaches their telescopes and knowing something about the laws of physics and how they operate here on Earth.
You have a chapter in the book entitled Asking the Allowed Questions, Bridge and Scientific Thinking, and you mentioned bridge, and mm-hmm. it's a game, but scientific in the way that it folds out. But what I love about the chapter is that idea of asking the allowed questions.
Right. There's only a few things that you can ask. And that's frequently the case in science. In physics, a lot of times we're studying things that are far too small to see. We want to know about the behavior of electrons and the protons and neutrons inside a nucleus. But what you can actually get information about is just things that come out from the atom. So you can send in light and look at what frequencies it absorbs or emits, or you can shoot in other particles and look at stuff that they knock out of the nucleus. And it's sort of amazing that people are able to deduce as much as we know about the internal structure of atoms. But the process by which we do that is basically identical to the process you use when playing a card game.
You use the word deduce, and you talk about this quite a bit in the book, but there is a mystery to it, isn't there? I mean, there's a lot of unknown in science.
Oh, that's the great part about science is that generally you're looking into things that people don't know anything about, right? If we knew what the answer was going to be, we wouldn't be doing the research in
right.
the first place.
Right.
That's again going back to the student issue. That's a difficult thing to teach students who start doing research projects with us. That, you know, I don't actually know that you'll be able to complete this in the course of an afternoon. That, you know, we're looking for answers that don't exist.
You make the point in the book that even though science has been around for as long as we have, this idea of institutions of modern science are really quite new.
Yeah, the word scientist actually is coined at a very specific, fairly recent point. It's in about 1835. There's a particular philosopher, William Whewell, who uses that for the first time. And it's actually into the 1900s before journals like Science and Nature agree to have that printed in describing people who do science. So the institutions of modern science are very recent. But the practice of science, this four-step process that I talk about, is fundamental to all sorts of things. And we can see traces of it going back hundreds of thousands of years.
That four-step process, I want to talk a little bit about, because there's that looking, but I love that thinking part of it, the idea of engaging and why it might work that way.
Yeah, and there's a great quote from John von Neumann who said that, you know, scientists don't measure things directly. They primarily make models. And that's really a big part of the scientific activity is thinking about, you know, what you see in the world and making a model that makes all of that fit together. And that's really the tricky thing a lot of the time. And it's central to the activity.
And then you get to test it
mm-hmm.
and figure out, well, okay, what do I have here?
Yeah, and it's an iterative process. You cycle through those first three steps many times
right.
often. You make
sort
some
of winnowing down.
Winnowing down and refining your models, and you know, you think you observe something, you think about why it might work that way, and then you go and you make some additional observations. But the key is really to compare your model to external reality, to what else is out there, and think about, okay, if this is true, what is this going to mean for some other situation that I haven't looked at yet? And then you go look at that other situation and see what happens.
This goes back to what we were talking about at the very beginning of making this understandable and accessible to people. Give us an idea of how a crossword puzzle is a scientific act.
So crossword puzzles are another great example, and it's actually one of the inspirations for the book. As I was doing a crossword puzzle on an airplane and realized that there's an essential scientific process there. And the way it works is you look at the clue, you think about a word that might fit in that blank, and then you test your theory against all the clues that cross it. And frequently, particularly for those really annoying theme clues that are like four words and it makes a pun of some sort,
yeah.
You're not going to guess it right away, but you can piece it together by looking at all of those crossing clues. And if all of the crossing clues fit together in a satisfying way, then you can be fairly confident that, you know, even an annoying theme clue that seems weird is the right answer because it hangs together with everything else.
So as a scientist, pen or pencil?
For a crossword?
Yes.
Usually whatever I have to hand.
Okay. All right. So
frequently I do them on my iPad. I have a crossword app there.
So you can change it if you
have to. Yes, you can change it easily.
Yeah. When you think about that as the title of the book, that Eureka moment of, oh, okay, this is what I know now, and now I'm going to tell you.
And the thing about it, you know, when the title was suggested by my publisher, I balked at it a little bit because it seems like a story that goes against the procedural definition that I'm using, right? This is the famous story of Archimedes in his bath suddenly realizing the solution to the problem that he was working on and then running naked through the streets of Sicily, yelling Eureka, meaning I've found it. But if you think about it, it actually fits very nicely with the idea of science in everyday life, because the key to his problem was that he continued to observe the world around him, right? His solution was that he noticed as he got into his bath after a long day of working on a particular problem, that water slopped out, and the more he sank down into the bath, the more water came out. And that was the solution to his problem. He realized that the amount of water that came out of the tub was directly related to how much of him was submerged in the water, displacing that water. And that let him solve the problem he was working on. So it was really an observation of a small detail about his environment. So, you know, Archimedes had his eureka moment because he didn't stop thinking like a scientist when he went to take a bath.
And how good are scientists in then convincing the rest of us of what you have discovered is true?
That can be the really hard part. And particular, you know, sometimes scientists aren't as good as we should be about communicating results to a broader public. You know, that's why, in part, scientists have the reputation of not being very good at talking to people. But in fact, communication of results is really an essential part of the process. You haven't really made a discovery until you convince everybody else that you've made a discovery. And that requires showing your work to everyone else that you know.
And it's one of the things that you've taken on, I used the term popularizer earlier, but to say to people in books like this and your past work as well, okay, but this doesn't have to be, once we have these ideas in our mind, once we have, okay, you can compare this to the crossword, you can compare this to the mystery story, then these ideas and concepts can be more understandable when they come across the science paper, you know, the science news of the day.
Yeah, and I think one of the things I'm hoping to accomplish with this book is to help people realize that they can recognize this process that they use in science. And even if you don't get all of the details of things, right? Many of the scientific stories I talk about are from fields outside my own, where I don't have the background to understand all of the intricacies of some of these things. But you can recognize good science and what sets good science apart from bad by looking at the steps of the process, right? I can say, okay, here's the evidence that we have for this particular thing. And maybe I can't do all of the math that matches this up to the theory, but I can recognize the process by which they got from one thing to another. And that is extremely useful for judging all sorts of scientific claims that people make about things that are important to everyday life and also to weighty issues of public policy.
Curiosity seems to be such a key ingredient.
Yeah, and that's really one of the big motivations is to have the curiosity about the world to go out and look at things. And that's one of the things to really keep in mind. There's a great story about Richard Feynman tells in his biography about he was on the Manhattan Project, and after that he was very burned out and just not making any progress at work. And he decided to just forget what he was supposed to be working on and play. And he noticed this student tossing a plate in the air, that the plate went around at one rate, but it wobbled at a slightly different rate. And he said, you know, is there a relationship between those? And then he worked out this calculation, and he describes it as like pulling a cork out of a bottle. So once he started playing with these simple problems, everything just flowed easily. And then he ended up doing work that eventually won him a Nobel Prize.
So ultimately, besides winning a Nobel Prize, what do you hope that people get out of the book?
What I hope that people get is a little more comfortable with the process, some recognition that this is something that you use, and then you can apply that to your everyday life. You know, I would encourage people to, you know, be open to and curious about the world around you and look at things that are there. And if you see something that's, you know, that's strange or inconvenient or just sort of interesting, you know, ask yourself why that is and think about what you could do to investigate that further and possibly make it better. And if you find something that makes your life better, make sure that you tell everybody about it so that everybody else can benefit from it.
The name of the book is Eureka, Discovering Your Inner Scientist. The book is published by Basic Books. Chad Arzell, thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure to have you on the program.
Thanks very much for having me on.
Best of luck with the book. Thank you very much. Again, the title, Eureka, Discovering Your Inner Scientist. It is published by Basic Books. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.